C4. Number 15B.
This whole story of animal magnetism is most interesting, and I have tried, just for the use of our students, to summarize it a little bit in a book that will come out this autumn. It's in the print, and it will be over here available, I guess, about October, November, where I tried to summarize in just about 40 pages the lineage of animal magnetism from Mesmer up to Quimby, and from there then the great break to Mrs. Eddy. The great break really is that up to that point of Quimby, they investigated animal magnetism from the point of view of the human mind, investigating human mind. And she was the one who had the courage to make that mutation and say, I'm not going to investigate primarily the human mind, I'm going to investigate the divine mind, and that divine mind is the only power, that divine mind is the Christ mind. And so began to show her therapy from the point of view of the divine mind healing, and confronted it with the mortal mind healing. So in that book, naturally, I show more than that history. It's a book of about 170 pages where I analyze then how Mrs. Eddy began to investigate from the point of view of the divine mind the phenomena of animal magnetism. How she had quite a lot of difficulty, actually all through her life, to investigate the question of evil. That it took really the whole lifetime to see clearer and clearer what this Antichrist really is, and to debunk it properly. And it's only a few months before she left us that she made the last change in the chapter on animal magnetism and called it Animal Magnetism Unmasked. That unmasked she put in 1910, in the middle of 1910. Even at the beginning of 1910, she didn't have that title yet. It was not yet unmasked. It was more animal magnetism analyzed. And so you can see she was always a bit foxed by that phenomena, animal magnetism, also. And it is most interesting to see how in each major edition of Science and Health, she would give a completely different presentation of the subject on animal magnetism. So that when one reads the first presentation on animal magnetism, which she has given in the first edition in 1875, you hardly see any similarity with how she deals with it at the end of her life. In between, she went through various phases, actually through seven phases, where she would first present in the first edition animal magnetism with the accentuation on mind. Then in the second edition she presented it with the accentuation on spirit, making the distinction between animal magnetism and metaphysics. Then she presented it later on in the third edition, that very well-sold edition. She presented animal magnetism from the point of view of soul, namely as malicious animal magnetism, as malpractice, and gave there all those accounts about Kennedy and about how they tried to attack her husband, Dr. Eddy, as being the murderer of somebody. All these attacks are written out there, very in all detail, just to show how malicious animal magnetism can work. Then, after she has sold those books like hot cakes, because it reads really like a crime story, she put all that stuff out, and in the fourth main edition she showed then animal magnetism from an impersonal way, taking no more all those cases into the book, but just dealing with it in an impersonal way, that animal magnetism is not the person, but an impersonal claim. Then she made that terrific change with the 16th main edition, which is the edition that has that tone of life in it, and she changed the whole chapter completely. very little has been taken over again, because she has begun to see there, at that point of persecution, life, the way of life, and the opposite is the persecution of the way of life. She had that animal magnetism all under the big tone of persecuting the idea that the dragon is persecuting the woman. That actually animal magnetism has only one aim, to kill the idea, to try to stop the idea, to try to suppress the idea. And it was no more something personal or something that happened in an individual case with individual minds trying to be evil, that she put it right back into the attempt of the dragon to kill the woman and the child that the woman would bring forth. It is at that time when she began to bring in Revelation, the Apocalypse, with the woman that is bringing forth the child. Then afterwards, she gave another presentation with the 50th edition, the presentation of truth, and again changed the whole presentation of animal magnetism and showed much more that animal magnetism is just the claim of doing wrong, and that the only way of handling animal magnetism would be to do right. That if everyone does right, he's not under the curse of animal magnetism. And then finally, at the beginning of this century, she changed it again slightly and put in the tone of love, where she began now to show that animal magnetism is nothing. Only here, at the beginning of this century, she, so to say, pierced through that whole claim of animal magnetism and making it nothing. So the story of development is quite impressive, because it shows that apparently there must have been a divine idea behind her, moving her, pushing her, always to see something more about the same claim, animal magnetism. So that the divine idea, in its creative sense, pushed Mrs. Eddy to present first the claim from the point of view of mind, then from the point of view of spirit and soul, and you can see very easily that it was not premeditated by Mrs. Eddy, that she felt, now I've presented it from the point of view of mind, that jolly well should now present it from the point of view of spirit. She didn't know about it, but the experiences she had always were teaching her something new. Every new presentation was the outcome of other experiences on animal magnetism. She would always say, until July of this year, we did not know this and this, as if she would pinpoint and say, this experience in this and this case, or with this and this people, have enlightened me in a higher way, and now, from now on, I know more about it. It's most interesting to see that story. That she always would give somehow an indication of a date or of an experience that made her realize that there is something more, still more about animal magnetism to be seen. So can you see it was the idea that was working? We'll see that tomorrow when we take the 10th chapter, that she shows that it's always the idea that works, that it's the science that makes the scientist, that it is the idea that makes history and not the other way around, that it's the idea that makes the philosopher and not the philosopher makes ideas. Things like that she brings out there. And here we have a very living description of this very unfoldment. Quite interesting, quite amazing. Yeah. So, finally we have the text as we have it today. It's now only 7 pages. At one time she wrote about 42 or 44 pages on that subject. She reduced it really to its scientific nature, free from all the various accounts and illustrations and experience she had, just trying to show what is animal magnetism. If you would ask, well, how could we define animal magnetism? I think we would say animal magnetism is to go out from another standpoint than God. I think every time we go out from another standpoint than God, the divine principle, we use animal magnetism. We believe in animal magnetism, use animal magnetism, And so animal magnetism is not just something that some funny people who have plenty of time to think evilly about somebody or something is operating. Animal magnetism is what we operate day in and day out, namely always then when we go out from another power than divine mind. I guess it's as simple as that. If we see that, then we can read that chapter more easily. So it seems to have always to do with mind, and perhaps if you have read that chapter, you always felt she's speaking about mind. But naturally it is, because the overall tone is the mind of Christ, and it's counterfeit, the Antichrist, the false, the mind of the human mind, the power of the human mind. Let's quickly run through the seven subjects. You perhaps take your epitomes that you have written out, and we just see how Mrs. Eddy now analyzes the phenomena of animal magnetism. Now I try as well as I can, as good as I can today, because we have to go quite a few times through the seven, in order not to make you too weary, I try to reason it out with you, if possible, on the ground that you know the seven synonymous terms. And so let's think, how could we describe animal magnetism and analyze animal magnetism if we have a fair knowledge of the seven synonymous terms? If you would have as an exercise to do, without the book, without the textbook, and say, what is animal magnetism from the seven synonymous terms, standpoint from the seven synonymous terms, we would say, well, what is mind? In mind, I think we would see that mind, the divine mind, is power. Therefore, that animal magnetism claims to be power, that it is therefore claiming a power. And so we have as an epitome here that Mrs. Eddy shows, yes, animal magnetism is based on the power of the human mind, the power of imagination. It's not based on the power of the intelligence of the one mind. Would you say this is quite natural, if I had asked you? If we look at, that's how she really depicts it here in that tone. She shows that animal magnetism is just an illusion. It's a belief in esoteric magic, actually that it is an occult conception. So all these occult, that you, the books on occultism that you find now in the bookstores by the hundreds and by the thousands, I think, just know, yes, they will tell us within those pages of many marvels, of many extraordinary phenomena that are quite extraordinary if compared with the old, nice, settled sense of materialism and material laws. But just think, they are not higher phenomena. They are not diviner phenomena. They are below matter. They are below that wonderful, reliable system of the laws of matter. They are far below that. They go right back into our dark ages, into the age where men lived in the magic age, and do nothing else but to remobilize and reactivate and remodify. Can you say modify? And remodify really that residue which is still in everybody. Namely, that residue of magic. Everybody has a sense of magic. Believes in the sense of the magic of numbers, in the magic of the word. If the doctor says a word and calls that word cancer, you have it. It's magic, that term. And his face, how he looks, very earnest, is magic. See, that's what the magician did. They played with the power of words and the power of rituals and so on. This is all magic. It has nothing to do with the divine mind. So in everyone still is a lot of the magical age still there, either in the conscious, mostly in the subconscious, and a whole lot of it in the unconscious and in the collective unconscious. And this book just bring all that old stuff again to the surface, show the extraordinary phenomena, But we should know it's all animal magnetism. It's all the phenomena of illusions, it's all the phenomena of mortal mind, it's all the phenomena of animal magnetism. Finished. As simple as that. We shouldn't give a single thought to it anymore. No matter what extraordinary phenomena say present in spiritualism, we have seen that mortal mind in its own realm can play all the tricks it wants. Mortal mind is a funny thing. It just can do anything in the realm of mortal mind. But we also have seen there in spiritualism that the mortal mind realm never touches the truth realm. Never touches the truth realm. Never communicates with the truth realm. Never can understand the truth realm. Alright, when we go to spirit, what would we see, say, if we had the question of animal magnetism and say, what is it from the standpoint of spirit? I think we all would say, well, only spirit is the real, only spirit is the substantial, so animal magnetism cannot be real, is unreal, is therefore a mere negation. That's what animal magnetism is. It's unreal, a mere negation. You see, the spirit is positive, huh? Spirit is positive. We have that as an idea in spirit, that spirit is positive. The counterfeit of it is that animal magnetism is negative. What means it negative? It always negates that which is, the reality of things. There's always a negative aim and negates the realm and the substance of spirit. If we come to soul, what would we say? If we say, well, soul we know as that which is unchangeable, which is balanced, which is joyful, happiness, which is has a sense of satisfaction, which is sinless, and the counterfeit of that is really terrible. If there is no joy, no happiness, no balance, no satisfaction, if there is no sinlessness, what is there? There is the whole gamut of evil things there, and so here you have malicious animal magnetism. Here in the tone of soul, she presents now the phases of malicious animal magnetism. Can you hear that malicious animal magnetism is the counterfeit of soul, not of spirit, huh? Not of spirit. Here she will speak about these aggressive forms of animal magnetism, about the criminal instincts, that's the counterfeit of soul, about subtlety, instead of that definiteness, naming it clearly, it's that subtlety, that serpent thing that you never can really tangibly get hold of it, it always slips away, huh? That's the subtlety, hidden. Evil always tries to operate in a hidden way, in a secret way, secretiveness, yes. It's despotism, not the freedom of soul, huh? And that's what she presents here as animal magnetism. That which is despotic, because why it is despotic? It is the wrong sense of control. Soul controls, the higher controls the lesser. Here it is the claim that the lesser can control the greater, that evil can control the good, that malicious animal magnetism can control the good man, the ignorant man, the benevolent man. Usually nobody is is a better medium for animal magnetism than just the ignorant man, the innocent man. He just can, he's like putty in the hands of animal magnetism. He cannot see through the subtlety and the secrecy of animal magnetism. That's why we always see that good people are misused. That's animal magnetism. Are misused. We come to the counterfeit of principle. Well, when we had principle, we would say, what is principle? Principle is the ever-operative principle. That ever-operative principle operates only by bringing out its own ideas. Ideas of good operate in a way of bringing out the maximum of good. Here, animal magnetism must do the very opposite. It is that which tries to bring out the maximum of evil. For a long time, until the last few years, Mrs. Eddy had in this passage here that very expression that that the maximum of evil is opposed by the maximum of good. Then she left it, she dropped it at the last stage of her textbook edition and dropped it and only left in the maximum of good and no more the maximum of evil. But that's what she wants to say. Principle is that which is one principle, whereas animal magnetism says I can operate in many ways, in a personal way, and so brings up all the classifications of animal magnetism, that it can operate either as malicious animal magnetism, as benevolent animal magnetism, as ignorant animal magnetism, as sympathetic animal magnetism, that's the worst of it, there we are blind. Animal magnetism can be intentional animal magnetism or unconscious animal magnetism, subconscious animal magnetism, like the archetypal claims. It's unconscious animal magnetism. The collective unconscious animal magnetism is all these collective beliefs operating on us and having a hold on us. You see how all these claims in the world, like heredity, like astrology, they all have their claim on each one of us. Some are more in the claim of these beliefs, some less, but mostly all are somehow subject to the claim of astrology. Even especially those who feel astrology is just nonsense and there is nothing in it, they are usually under the influence of astrology, because they are not aware that they should be under the influence of the one principle. If they are not under the influence of one principle, they are under the influence of other powers. Among them is that old, thousand year old archetypal belief that the stars rule our lives and our destiny, that they form our character. So this is a belief just as a hereditary belief, which we can't deny. Each one just finds out that somehow he acts just like his mother, just like his father, just like his so-and-so and the other. He begins to resemble much more again how his father is, how his mother is, and so on. He has the same claims, the same diseases as his father had, his mother had, his uncle had, his grandfather had, his grandmother had, his whole relatives had, and so on. You have just a terrific claim of belonging to the class of a family, to the class of a race, and therefore you are under the claim of a race, under the claim of a nation. You act the way an American act, I act the way a Swiss act. That's a claim of animal magnetism. We should act according to principle and not according to a nation or to a race. Can you see, it's a whole gamut of evil that is here under consideration and says, but there should actually be only one category of power, principles on power. Now, if we don't see that consciously, then we are unconsciously under the claim of animal magnetism. Then we go to life, and in life, what could we see if we would have to find out what animal magnetism is at the point of life? We would say, well, life is the newness of life, the spontaneity of life, the mutation of life, the easiness of life, the exaltation of life. And animal magnetism would be the claim that acts against that, that does not want the newness of life, but wants to kill, wants to harm, that wants to persecute the newness of life. Here animal magnetism is presented as that which persecutes, which belies, which kills, which persecutes every new idea. That every new idea that is presented, animal magnetism will fight it, will persecute it, will belie it, will misrepresent it. That's the claim of animal magnetism at the point of life. At the point of truth, we can see that because truth is true and right, animal magnetism always tries to be unjust, always is wrong. Under whatever circumstance it is, it's always wrong, no matter if we like it or don't like it, no matter if it's benevolent, no matter if it's sympathetic or not, it's always wrong, and we should see that. and therefore never accept the theodicy of the theologians, which accept that God also needs and works through error. Then finally, at the point of love, we see that love, because love is holiness, is all in all inclusive, that therefore animal magnetism should be excluded. She uses it, should not be sanctioned, that we should never sanction animal magnetism under any mask, whatever, but that it does not belong into the holiness of being. And in this way you can see how we can analyze the claim of animal magnetism if we know the seven synonymous terms.